give me a second. My my wife used my studio for podcasting yesterday, and she's got all my settings.
My wife.
Russ, you did it. Oh shit, Justin, are you okay?
Did you guys hear that? Am I going crazy here? This guy's doing Borat, but he's not even Borat.
My way.
Yeah. Oh, Russ, you're gonna hurt him.
How am I supposed to do a podcast with this fucking guy? Sasha, are you there? Are you pretending to be Russ?
No, it's me, Russ. I was just doing it. I was doing it.
That's what
Sasha.
He would say, though. That's what Sasha would say.
That's true. He's always deep cover.
To be Russ.
Wah wah wee wah.
Oh my god!
Guys, we gotta do our show. Stop.
To Borat for the price of none. I didn't even buy a ticket to Borat. I'm getting it in 3D over here.
Griff, you got one?
Oh, Kazakhstan.
I don't know. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best movie of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I'm having fun in the summertime at the cinema.
My name is Christopher Plant, and I'm not here to spoil the end of this film.
My name is Russ Frushing, and I know Sega.
Oh.
What if it had always been Russ's voice that did that before all the Sega games, and it was just Russ from all the way back to from the beginning of time? Do you think do you think we'd still be talking about Sega? Do you think we would have just? Do you think the Sonic the Hedgehog movie would have crossed the finish line?
You think I would have ruined it if it was me?
I think you would have maybe poisoned the timeline a little bit.
See, I feel like the opposite. I feel like the Sega, like the angry.
Oh shit! You're
like,
right.
That
was
scared
terrible.
People off. It created the toxic video game environment. If we had just had the gentle coo of a baby Russ Frushtick. Yeah. We're talking about an entirely different video game timeline.
Can I try it?
Yeah, sure. Give us another one.
Sega.
Pretty good.
As a little baby.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I love when Russ pretends to be a baby. Justin, I'm sorry. You were introducing the show.
Yeah. It's the Besties, where we feature the latest and greatest in interactive video game technology. It is a Game of the Week book club that goes all year long.
And, so wait, the latest and greatest of video game technology, which is why last week we did a 30-year-old video game, and this week and a movie.
Which is your fault. The last one was your fault. We covered that extensively, as you heard. So I want to do a little table setting before we get into the bulk of this discussion. When we had planned to talk about, I'm in a little bit of a tailspin, because when we had planned to talk about the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, I think we were all, on some level, planning to have a little fun at Sonic's expense. And now, we've all seen the film, and I'm sitting here trying to wonder how we're going to get 20 minutes out of material from, Sonic kind of fucks.
Sonic kind of rips ass, dude. It's, we all had a good, we were all, I've never quite seen anything like the text chain we all got going this past weekend as we all excitedly realized, like, wait a minute, Sonic rips ass, dude. What? I never would have guessed.
Let's be fair here. The three of you were negative nillies. And I said, before we had all seen the movie, I said, I have word from an inside source that there is a joke in the movie where Sonic farts.
Right.
And then James Marsden says, whoa, you better clean that fur, implying it was a very wet fart. And I assumed that would have set the record straight before we walked into the movie theater that this movie would rule.
Oh, you like that? Oh, hold on, wait, you like that? Because I actually wanted to call that scene out as being the worst imaginable sort of piece of Sonic media, worse than the kiss with the girl, worse than nude Sonic with his scarf. Like, it's the worst. That scene made me conjure up an image of Sonic. It made me conjure up two things. One, an image of Sonic, his fur matted with his own spoiled shit. His own that he confesses is because of chili dogs. Like, it is a repugnant image.
Sure.
And it also makes you think about what that little blue gentleman actually smells like. And I hate that. I do not want to think about what that is. That sort of brings me to the conundrum of the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. And it's how I feel. It's not, I don't know how you all feel about it.
I was disappointed while I was watching it that I knew that while I was watching this, it's very hard to talk about a movie that was pretty damn good.
Well, but here's the mystery of the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. I went with my 3-year-old son, who I have taken to see two movies in the past, and he has, like, one of them, he sat through Detective Pikachu. He was, like, fucking in there like swimwear.
Sure.
Like, he was glued to the screen, loved every second of it. Toy Story 4, some of the dramatic beats. He got a little antsy. Oh, Frozen 2, same sort of deal. Got a little antsy during. So I was like, I don't know how he's going to do during Sonic the Hedgehog. He was into it the whole way. It is very much a kid's movie. That's kind of like the news coming out of the reviews of this film, is that, like, it is very geared towards a very young audience. And that's fine. I enjoyed this movie on a level I cannot really explain, because it is comedy forward. Let's say it has assertive notes of comedy, and also almost every joke in the movie fails catastrophically on pretty much every level.
Incorrect. Incorrect. I disagree with you. I think it is a return to form for Jim Carrey.
Yes. I haven't even touched on Mr. Carrey's work in the film.
He Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik is very funny. And we remember, despite some dark times with Jim, maybe some anti-vax sentiments, maybe some nihilism, maybe some inappropriate comments in interviews, number 23, thank Jesus. You, the Majestic.
Dark Crimes? Wasn't he in one called Dark Crimes?
He's had some moments, but the main thing is just he's back in that Ace Ventura mode of all things. And it's such a wild pull, and he actually sells every joke in this movie. Like, I was, like, laughing repeatedly at Jim Carrey, which was already, I was simultaneously nostalgic for Sonic and Jim Carrey making me laugh. It was two at the same time, which I thought was fantastic. I thought he was genuinely very funny. My favorite laugh in the movie, though, was not actually scripted into the film itself. I have two quick stories. This is the first one. When James Marsden appears on the screen for the first time, a seemingly six-year-old kid seated behind me and my daughter said out loud to his mom, "Oh, it's a normal guy." That is the fucking most James Marsden. Like, yeah, he's a normal guy. He's just James Marsden, a normal guy.
Very astute.
That's good.
The other very quick story I want to tell before we talk more about the film itself. I saw it in the beautiful Marquee Cinemas in Huntington, West Virginia, in the Pullman Plaza. And I'm watching the movie, and when it's in the first, big music cue, I think it's Don't Stop Me Now by Queen, and he's running through the forest or whatever, I realized that the music was muffled, okay? And it was, like, very distracting to me. And I got it in my head that, like, I'm not going to be able to properly evaluate this film because the music track is muffled. So I go out to the I go out to the counter. I'm like, "Excuse me, there seems to be a problem with the sound. The music is muffled." And they're like, "Okay, we'll check it out." So I go back to my seat, and I see the person come in from the theater and stand there. And it's at a part where there's no music, so it sounds fine. And the person then leaves. 3 minutes go by. There's another big music cue. It's muffled. Suddenly, I'm the lunatic that's come out the second time. It's like, no. You have to understand. The music is muffled. You have to wait till there's music. So then the manager comes in, and I slink back to my seat and just watch out of the corner of my eye as the manager has to stand there through 10 music-free minutes of the Sonic movie because this fucking madman has to have it exactly as the director's intended.
Accurate.
Yeah, just, like, bounce it out.
The I am curious about Russ and Chris's thoughts of the comedy because to frame it, my problems with it are twofold. One, like, just so many fucking like fart jokes, and that's fine. Like I'm not shitting on like kids forward comedy, but like it is a lazy kind that I just
just pause for a second because I think we are so deep down the hedgehog hole at this point that I think we should take a step back and just give a quick overview of the plot of this movie for people that have not seen it yet, because I do think from a storytelling perspective, it succeeds on a lot of levels.
That's what I was getting to, is like as an adventure and as like an action movie, weirdly, like I enjoyed it in the same way I kind of enjoyed like the Fast and the Furious movies, but it is like a buddy.
It's like a road trip, buddy comedy.
Road trip.
Okay, let me start from the beginning and I'll try to do the rundown. Baby Sonic awakens in the jungle. He has been living on a land very reminiscent to the Sega Genesis games with loop-de-loops and squares on the textures and like everything you remember from Sonic the Hedgehog, the video game.
I want to warn you, I'm watching you do this and pretending I'm just watching a YouTube video.
Okay.
Talking to
yourself. Perfect. That's great. So he's a little baby, but he's still very fast. And he meets everyone's favorite adult character in the Sonic franchise, Longclaw, an owl who I do not recognize at all. Is Longclaw like a thing?
It's you saying that. You have sealed your own fate with some sort of community. some sort of faction in the community is now going to burn your house.
Okay, I'm sorry, Longclaw Ease. Anyway, Longclaw is there and she's like a mentor to Sonic. But unfortunately, there's a rival faction that appears to be
only in the movie.
A bunch.
Only in the movie, by the way. Only in the movie. Which is wild. That thing's got 50 million animals. You can't pull one more out of your ass.
That did seem surprising that they didn't want to pull another reference. So apparently there's some Knuckles-like echidnas chasing after Longclaw, and they shoot the owl with an arrow, and she's like, run, baby Sonic, run, and gives him a bunch of rings, and the rings are like teleportation devices that he can throw on the ground and think of a place, and he'll go there. So he's basically on the run from Knuckles and his friends.
I know we've never talked about a movie on this show before, but I don't think we should recap every
single
scene.
Hold on, this is important. This is good setup. I'm not going to do every scene, but it's important you understand how we get into the contrast.
James Marsden says, I want to move to San Francisco because I want to be a cop.
It's very important to the
movie.
Okay,
so he's in America now. Where is it? Okay. Montana or something? And James Marsden is indeed a cop. And he's on the road scanning cars. But what's this? Something goes by very quickly. Anyway, skip ahead. Sonic's living in this small town. And then he runs really fast because he's super lonely because Longclaw died or something. And then he runs around a baseball field so fast that he creates an energy beam that brings Jim Carrey to chase after him. And they end up in San Francisco and have a big fight.
That was detailed. The entire first 5 minutes and then skipped the actual plot.
No, that was the plot.
Sonic and James Marsden go on a road trip to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Hey,
To
get his rings back. Yeah. I think like the friendship that forms between James Marsden, who, by the way, puts on a fucking clinic in this movie.
He does. He's very good.
He is not phoning this in. He is a glue, and he is a normal guy who, let's remember, was just yelling at nothing for months.
I think that's the big takeaway from this film, is that nobody phones anything in, and that's why it's so good, is because everyone commits so hardcore to everything they're doing, which ordinarily you wouldn't expect from a Sonic the Hedgehog movie, but man, people go for it.
Now, one might argue, though, that there was one performer in the movie who had maybe too much energy, that maybe it did need to be reined in even just a little bit. And I'm not talking about Sonic the Hedgehog and his power quills, I guess. His electricity quills?
Sure.
Is that a thing?
Don't say Jim.
I just want to know how, Russ and Chris, how did Jim treat you? Because I feel like he grabbed the dial so firmly that was titled, that the dial named Jim Carrey, and he turned it up to fucking maximum, and then he tore it off and threw it in a river.
Okay.
This fucking guy.
I don't think this is a problem with the movie. I enjoyed this. I think somehow they made two movies And then the editor had both these films, and they were like, oh, I can't remember which one was marked the movie we were supposed to ship, and then spliced them together. And the reason I say this is you say, you know, like, the jokes, they're all kids' movie jokes that fail catastrophically. That's true, I don't know, maybe like 70% of the time. Then there are jokes like the following one, which I will describe to you, where Jim Carrey plays Dr. Robotnik. He is supposed to be the world's smartest man slash supervillain technocrat, right? And James Marsden, average guy, small town cop. Jim Carrey says to James Marsden, I was writing formulas when you were sipping formulas. And then James Marsden says, actually, I was breastfed. And then Jim Carrey says, way to rub it in my orphan face.
It's fucking very
That's
good.
That's pretty good.
Great. And it is not at peace with the rest of the movie. Which, and I can't figure out how it happened. That doesn't feel like a improv line.
No.
That feels like it does feel written. In the script.
I think there's more like sort of hints at what you're talking about, Plant. Neil McDonough is introduced at one point as sort of like a military heavy. If you don't know Neil McDonough, you probably know him, may remember him as Vincent Sofel from Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
Also,
he's
Band
also
of Brothers.
In Justified. Yeah, he's been on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 is like the main, is the biggie. He's introduced as sort of like a military heavy. He's like seventh build in the film, and he is in it for 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's about right.
And then just vanishes, which makes me think that like maybe he was more of a presence earlier on.
I mean, did
and
you
then they
miss
were, like,
him?
Really drilled. What?
Did you miss him? Did you feel like you lost something?
I love Neil McDonough, so his absence was felt by me because I think he's actually genius. And it makes me wonder if like it's just you don't get a Neil McDonough for that role if you don't need a Neil McDonough in that role. You get the cheap version of Neil McDonough, right? You get a discount.
Yeah, he was definitely a bigger role. I just didn't think that they needed more military guys smattered around to bounce off Jim Carrey.
I'm just saying it's a weird, it makes me think that he maybe was more prominent and then they've like scaled it back and focused on other things in the movie.
Yeah, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to agree with Griffin. I think for me, I understand for children, probably youngsters, the Jim Carrey scenes were probably pretty entertaining insofar as he's a wacky guy shouting things. For me, I found him the weakest part of the movie, and I was extremely eager to return to Sonic and his saga.
I wanted Sonic to kill him. I wanted him to die at Sonic's
hands. Maybe that's intentional.
I wanted Sonic to spin through.
What about the dance break?
That's what I wanted. Like, that was the next thing I wanted to talk about. Like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. He has a fucking dance break where he, like, turns on this 3D projector and goes skiing in front of it, and it's like, what the fuck am I watching right now, Jim?
Here's the argument I would make is that Jim Carrey, here's what he brings to this movie for me. One, the selling gags in certain scenes like actually landed for me. I think he is able to do, he brings an actual genuine menace to the character without like riding that rail between menace and like
clown.
Still not threatening to kids. Yeah. Like Brendan Gleeson in Paddington 2.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like, genuinely kind of scary, but also not gonna freak kids out or whatever. And I think that his sensibilities, which I feel like are probably injected through the movie through things like the dance scene and his last like scene after, you know, at the end of the film, I feel like are sort of his more surrealist sensibilities that keep it from being sort of a stale, just like straight by the numbers, you know, Sonic film. Plant, what do you think?
I think he's perfect. I would not change a thing he did. I do want to talk about the third film, because I realized I left this out, my theory. It is not two films. There are three films. One is the traditional children's movie. Two is the existential nightmare that Jim Carrey is inhabiting. And three is the direct-to-camera advertisements, of which there are a surplus.
I did want to bring one of these up, so I'm glad you mentioned it.
Well, the three I counted, one of which gets a callback, is Zillow, Optical Illusions, a glasses store.
Is that a real glasses store?
I think so. I think. And we should check. And then the last one
is
Olive Garden, which gets two very big moments in the film.
But they're fucking funny.
But they
are
good.
It's so good.
They bring
because
the plane down.
Because it cements It serves a story focus because he is excited to get an Olive Garden gift card, and that cements his status as a normal guy. He's just a regular guy.
To be fair, he's disappointed. That's what I found interesting about that product placement. He is disappointed that is not bigger than an Olive Garden gift card. It is implied that he will, his house, suffice it to say, gets wrecked throughout the movie. And as a reward, the American government gives him an Olive Garden gift card for $50.
Yes. Also, inconsistencies. I agree with Justin. The Olive Garden, deeply relatable. The only app he has on his phone, Olive Garden. What's not relatable is the Zillow product placement, where they look at an apartment in San Francisco, and the rent is $4,600 a month.
Yes, I wrote the same thing down. Now, something to keep in mind. He is a small town sheriff. His plan is to move to San Francisco from this small town and be a street cop. So a street cop in San Francisco, I don't know what they would make. Let's say it's $50,000 for...
It's a wild MacGuffin of like his big dream that he's chasing is to also be a cop still in a bigger city.
A more threatening city.
Yeah.
But now his intention is to move there with his wife, who is a vet, and pay $4,600 for an apartment in San Francisco. Now, that is an accurate portrayal of the apartment prices in San Francisco.
Fair.
But
all right. Listen, we got it. We're running out of time.
Okay.
And I feel
I'll take all day to talk about this fantastic film Sonic the Hedgehog.
Like specific weird things about the movie, and I don't think we've really necessarily nailed down like why it works.
Why does it work?
Aside from like genuinely great performances, like I really, not a joke. Like I can't remember seeing James Marsden in anything where he left like quite as big an impression. And maybe it's just because like he was providing me like, you know, I was deep, deep under the Jim Carrey ocean, and he would provide me with oxygen.
So my mentality on why this movie works, I need to step back briefly and say, for whatever reason, I got President's Day off this year, and what it left me with was an entire day off that no one else on the planet has off, which means that I had to see this movie alone at 11:30 in the morning, surrounded by children on a quasi day off. So it did leave me with the sense of like having to analyze this movie, not in the eyes of a child, but so much as like my creepy sitting alone in a theater watching a children's movie. And why did it work? I think I mentioned this earlier, but I really do think it's because everyone goes for it. Ben Schwartz, who plays the voice of Sonic,
yeah, we haven't even mentioned,
is like, I mean, his milieu is going for it. Like everything he ever does, John Ralphio and House of Lies and his Middleditch and Schwartz improv shows is going for it with a capital G.
But never grading.
And never grading.
And a genuine earnestness. Yeah.
And I do think because of that energy, without that energy, I think as good as James Marsden was, the movie does not work in the least. The fact that I cared more about Sonic the Hedgehog from this film than I did from 30 years of video games is really impressive.
The action scenes are also like pretty fucking tight, and the movie culminates in like what was a shockingly kind of like badass moment, like a shockingly kind of like fuck hell yeah,
I got jazzed.
Get him,
yeah,
Sonic.
I said like, to myself as an adult, fuck him up, Sonic. Yeah, I said this to myself, an adult.
It's an uneven movie for me because some of the jokes did work and they were really good. The pretzel lady who is the sheriff's
wife
or girlfriend, her sister in the movie hates sheriff and has like is dropping nonstop bombs. Like she's throwing out fucking hand grenades. Like
so
she's crushing
funny.
It.
Hysterical.
So like it's uneven in that regard, but it's a surprisingly sweet and like super competent like action buddy comedy adventure.
I want to know why this worked for Justin real quick.
I feel like it works because it is I understand what you're saying about the joke, some of the jokes like not landing, but I feel like they landed for who they were supposed to land for almost without fail. It reminded me of watching something like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs for the first time, where it's like, oh, this is like an actually confident comedic voice. Like, and it's well scripted, and there are moments that work for the adults, and there's moments that work for the kids, and it's all written, I think, to support strengths of Sonic the character as he is. There's a character in the movie called Crazy Carl, mm-hmm. who has seen Sonic in this town and has like tried to get people to believe that he's real, and no one does believe him. And at the end of the film, he is vindicated in this. And there's little beats throughout that, throughout the movie like that, that are like, that really pay off and are really funny. And I think that it just like, it's never at, I think the other thing that it succeeds in where so many video game adaptations fail is, one, it's working with something of a blank slate, sure. because there's not a lot of narrative to append to this guy. But also, it doesn't shoehorn in a bunch of winky references. It does them very tastefully, where you'll hear like a music cue from Green Hill Zone, mm-hmm.
yes.
and it's just like dropped it. It's not like punch you in the face with it.
Just a note on that and why I think this movie is lovely and why I think it will actually age very well. So I love Hocus Pocus, which is a movie I'm not sure if it is good or bad, but Hocus Pocus is distinctly of the year it was released. Everybody is wearing jackets that look like MC Hammer had them. They have words carved into the back of their head. The mother at one point is dressed as Madonna. It is a movie of the era without being a movie where it's just repeating other jokes from the era. Which is a thing I think a lot of kids' movies do, right. where they're like, hey, you remember this joke from that movie that came out last year? And Sonic reminds me so much of that. The jokes themselves are not referential, but Sonic flosses. And there is app humor. And the enemy is drones. And the entire credits, like closing credits song, this movie is so distinctly the year 2020. And yeah. I am so excited to watch this movie in 10 years and for it to feel like this bizarre time warp. And I think this,
what's he doing like with his arms?
Oh, yeah. Remember
he's moving his arms back and forth. What is that?
That was when Fortnite was only in season 2. Oh, yes.
Before it was elected president of the United States of Games.
Hey, let's go to a break.
So we're back to talk more about Sonic and why my brother's wrong about Jim Carrey. No, sadly, no. We have no more time for this. What y'all been playing on the video games to cool down from watching the Sonic films?
I'll go first since mine's pretty short. I just wrapped up the expansion for Fire Emblem Three Houses that just came out. It's really kind of neat how they're doing it. It's called Cindered Shadows, and it's all about this secret fourth house, like this underground fourth house in a place under the monastery where the whole game takes place called the Abyss. So it introduces these new characters and also introduces like a handful of new, like entirely new classes that kind of like add a lot of like neat depth and new stuff to like the team compositions that you can put together. And also tells like kind of a like cool story. Like the characters are actually really well developed, much better, I think, than most of the characters in like the core Three Houses storyline, which I haven't finished. I just restarted my playthrough as a Blue Lions devotee this time around. But like, I really do enjoy these games. It is tough for me to finish a Fire Emblem game because I feel like my desire to like engage with that level of tactics, it burns out like fairly quickly.
Yeah, I think the pacing is probably the problem long term. So I agree with you there for sure.
The idea of a 7-chapter
yeah.
like storyline where each battle also has like weird distinct like mechanics that really take it's fucking hard, like it's way harder than anything I played in the original game. And so like it's a really satisfying puzzle. There's one level where you start at like one end of this like underground channel and there are two gates that close after 10 rounds. And so you have to like get your whole team race through there
yeah.
as two factions of enemies are fighting each other around you. Like it's fucking cool. And most of the battles are like that. I think it's great. And then also once you finish it, you can recruit them into the main game, and there's like new paralogues and new genuinely a ton of new stuff.
I just like that there were sewer
you've
children.
Talked about this for too long.
Okay,
this is you've too long. You've talked about this. I want to talk about something else.
Fair,
go for it, Justin.
You're burning Jim Carrey time,
Justin. What were you playing this week?
Got an Oculus Quest. Been playing some stuff on it. There's a really good one called pistol whip. You guys tried that?
Not yet.
Okay, here's the pitch. Imagine y'all played Super Hot.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Played Super Hot. Imagine if Super Hot was a rhythm game, and that is pretty much the best description I can give you of pistol whip. There's a sort of pulsing techno song, and you're moving forward on rails, and dudes are like popping out of nowhere, like kind of shadowy, spectery dudes without a lot of definition, but very much like Super Hot, are popping out of nowhere, and you shoot them with your gun, point down to reload. There are, you can also punch, if somebody gets close enough to you, you can punch and refill your health.
Or pistol whip them.
Or pistol whip them, if you like. That's what you're actually doing. And there's barriers also that will come at you that require you to like physically move to avoid them or duck, you know, to avoid the barriers. But you are scored better if you shoot on the beat. So you get into this groove that is the closest I felt to like a John Wick sort of feeling of like this choreographed action sequence, because I am like waiting for the beat to shoot dudes. And when you get into a groove with it, where like six guys pop out of nowhere and you're, you know, bang, bang, bang. And there's bullets coming at you that you're also dodging as you're moving out of the way and like popping these guys. It's really, really, really great exercise too. Like you're moving all around. Like I've ended up sweaty after a couple of like harder difficulty levels.
I'm a big like Beat Saber fan. Like I managed to get it and did all the shit you have to do to hack it to put your like own songs into it, and would play that. Like I don't do it as much these days, but I'd play it for, you know, a half hour at a time at like the highest difficulty, and be like, my watch would be like, dude, your fucking heart's about to explode. You need to calm down. I think I need to try pistol whip again and turn up the difficulty a little bit, because on I wanted that feeling of that John Wick feeling. And I feel like on easy mode or normal mode or whatever, like you don't really get it, because it's too slow. It's like playing Guitar
Hero.
Bump
it up. But yeah, I would say bump it up. You can also turn on a modifier that lets you use two pistols.
Okay.
And that was like, that's primo.
Yeah.
I will talk about what I've been playing. I mentioned last week I was playing Bloodstained on Switch, which I ended up finishing and was like super thrilled with it, especially on the fact that it runs on Switch okay. And then I was like really still hankering for Metroidvania stuff, so I dip back into Rogue Legacy, which is a game I bought for like $6 on sale on Switch, and just been like grinding that out because I absolutely love it. And then this morning, I saw that a Witcher patch has been released for Switch, the Switch version, which will let you play saves on PC. Like you could transfer your save from Switch to PC.
Cool. Wow.
Which is extremely cool to think that like I've been playing this game for 100 hours and it looks pretty janky on Switch. I mean, it works, but it looks pretty janky. So to think that I could like jump into the future and be like, oh, damn, this game is fucking awesome, and I don't have to like start from the beginning to play it on PC with mods and all sorts of stuff. So really cool, but it's mostly just like kind of going back to games that I've played before. But it's been really good.
They did that with Divinity, right?
Divinity had the same sort of functionality. Man, yeah, really
it's
good.
It's so fucking smart. Yeah. Like it is such a cool feature that I wish like every PC game on Switch could do.
Yeah.
Plan?
My game of the week, I'm not playing, I'm watching. And I know that Hoops, you're going to be right there with me. Survivor. Winners at War.
Oh, yeah. I'm watching it too.
And I...
Not on that tip yet.
Really? I'm shocked.
I was so... You know what? Honestly, the last season bummed me out so much. So I bailed halfway through it. And like I didn't even realize it had come back until it popped up in my DVR. And I haven't had a chance to
off Survivor probably three years ago. Missed last season, which I heard was...
This last one was...
Yeah, I heard it was a horror show.
Garbage.
Yeah, real bad.
But Winners at War, it feels like they're trying to make up for that. Because it's just people who've won the game. And boy, oh boy, does that make for a really good show, especially in the early episodes where if you've all watched Survivor before, the early episodes are usually dull because a whole bunch of people who have vaguely similar names like Todd, Tim,
Todd and Rob,
Chris, Terry,
Kirsten.
Yeah, they all kind of stink at the game and they make amateur mistakes and there isn't really a lot happening and everybody's timid or somebody tries too hard, and it takes like until the merge about halfway through for anything exciting to happen. the opposite is
Yule
true.
On there? Yule Kwan?
Yes. On there, yes.
Best to ever play the game, by the way. Number one.
It's ridiculous now because everybody is so hardcore. I mean, you can tell that they're just having to cut the show in an entirely different way. Where, it, you know, in previous seasons, somebody would say something to person A would say something to person B, and then later in the episode, there would be a big moment where person B tells person C. And like now it's like person A tells something to person B, and then it just cuts to C telling it to D, and then D telling it to E, and then E telling it to A, yeah. And then A going back to like, it just is so, so fast.
It's like there's a galaxy brain for an hour, basically.
There are a lot of new rules that I think almost make it so complicated that it prevents players from having good strategy, but we will see. Still early on.
If you ever want to pivot, by the way, and just make this a Survivor podcast where we talk about the meta of Survivor, I'm in.
There's like a new currency, too, that you can use to like buy either benefit
V-Bucks.
Like rewards.
It's V-Bucks, actually. V-Bucks.
It's fire tokens, and you get them on whatever last...
Isle of Extinction or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk about reader mail. There are so many people, and I love everybody who listens to this program like they're my child, so many extremely bad takes about the Sonic email to us that I cannot. Some people are very appropriate. Let's see. Here's one from Niche. I watched Sonic the Hedgehog movie on its release day and was not expecting great things. I was, however, expecting a movie about Sonic the Hedgehog. You know, the little blue spiky chap who collects rings, frees animals from robots, and collects Chaos Emeralds to go supersonic. This movie isn't about Sonic. They used his name and then did a load of other new nonsensical shit and then put him in a car for 90% of the film. Strange. Incorrect. You've described a very bad Sonic movie, although you are right that he is in a car for an extremely long period of time. Really, that is fucking extremely accurate. It is wild how much time Sonic got tranquilized. Cars.
It's pretty bare bones adaptation wise. Like, it's Sonic, he's got red shoes and he lives in Green Hill Zone, basically.
Well, he does earn his red shoes, but yeah.
I get that.
Bob said, how is there only one chili dog reference? He wouldn't shut up about them in the cartoon show. Bob, are you high? You've described a bad version of this. This is a bad version. The good version is one chili dog.
Even that was too much because it came after the aforementioned wet fart.
Yeah.
I have a at Coffee Lancelot says, the Sonic Hedgehog movie was a lot of fun for me as a longtime Sonic fan, though my biggest complaint is that there was a severe lack of Sonic the Hedgehog's feet. Though we got a lot, a little bit of teases, I would like to see more in the sequel.
Okay, so this is interesting. I don't know if you guys are aware, but there is no canonical agreement as to what Sonic's feet look like. Sega is very careful about not showing Sonic without shoes on. This movie actually has shown more of Sonic's feet than I think any Sonic product before this, because there's a moment at which his shoes need to be removed. He's wearing socks, but the socks are very worn because of all the running. But so you do actually see his feet briefly, but only like kind of parts of his feet.
There's an X-ray of his foot at one part that Dr. Robotnik does. Like, we see his foot pretty fucking explicitly. So, like, I don't know how much more Sonic foot action. This is the most Sonic foot you've ever gotten, and you're complaining that there's not more Sonic foot in it.
This is the only correct take in our email from Megan. Never has a group of five college-educated women been more confused yet delighted by a film. Jim Carrey gave an Oscar-worthy performance as a deranged Eggman, while Sonic flossing made me kick out my legs in a strange fight-or-flight reflex. That is accurate. The accurate response. When the jokes hit, they hit. And when they didn't, you were just watching Sonic fart, I guess.
That's
a solid 3 stars. Megan does not say out of how many stars, but it gets 3 stars.
I'm assuming out of 4. What a wild episode this is. It really, sliding doors, right? There's a version of this episode where the movie is just fucking garbage because, boys, that trailer set to Gangster's Paradise, like, did not inspire confidence.
No.
I'm not even talking about, like, everybody was so up in arms about Sonic's aesthetic and, like, joking aside, it is kind of wild how much effort went into fixing that because he looks, like, actually great and kind of cute now. I was more worried about the fact that all the jokes in the trailer were stinkers and the movie looked pretty terrible and somehow it was good and fun.
Y'all, before we go, I want to share a thing, but it involves the post-credit scene. So
we can't spoil it.
Yeah, if people, I gotta share it because this brought
me.
Yeah,
talk about it. We can give people a window. Hold on, let me check the time.
Okay,
we are currently at 41:50.
It'll be different once it's edited. Yeah, so that doesn't.
Yeah,
matter.
But we're 41:50. It's called 42.
You can probably just dip out of the rest of the show if you don't want to hear it. I guess.
Yeah, you're not gonna miss much. 2 minutes. Follow and share on Spotify. Okay.
So at the end of the movie, Sonic saves the day. Dr. Eggman Robotnik is sent to the Mushroom World. Then credits roll, right? And come back, and who is floating over the Pacific Northwest but Tails, a lifelike CG version of Sonic 2's best character and probably the greatest character in Sonic mythos. That alone is great. What is even better is the entire theater I am in erupting. I mean, like sports, final seconds, game-winning shot.
Sports level yelling.
Erupting. Erupting. And I'm like, who is this? Who are these people? This didn't sound like children. They sounded like grown people, men and women. So I leave the theater, go to the restroom, go outside, and outside I find a group of probably a dozen or so college age kids, and they are almost sobbing with joy about what they have experienced. And all I can vaguely hear is Sonic movie. So I'm like, okay, these are the people. This is who it was. And I inch my way close while taking out my phone because I don't want to look like I'm spying on them, which I am. And one of the men in this group says, and I quote this exactly, I wrote it down immediately, "If I get married, I still won't be as happy as I was when I saw Soft Tails on the big screen."
Fucking so good. I also enjoy that, considering what the character design process of this is, that they had the strength of their own convictions to just show Tails at the end. Like, he looks like this. Fuck off.
Yeah.
This is what he looks like. Can't change it. Can't make us change it. Looks like this. Although I will be surprised if they don't replace the voice actor with something a little more well-known. That's 2 minutes. That's the end of the spoiler segment. And that's also the end of this program.
What are we going to do next week? Next week, what are we going to do?
Wow. I was like, it's dreams, baby. Yay. Start. Go to sleep. Tell us about your dreams. And now here's for the reader mail segment. Don't talk about the game dreams. Just email us about your dreams. I just want the longest emails you can give us about your dreams. And if you see anything particularly weird in the game dreams, you can please let us know about that as well. Don't email us about your actual dreams. That would be, I will just delete them. I'll set up a spam filter if I have to.
You can follow us on Twitter at the Besties Pod. You can also join our newsletter, which is linked on our Twitter feed.
That's going to do it for us. So thank you. And be sure to join us again next time for the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
The Besties is a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!